Even if there wasn't the Ukrainian fight, our stockpiles are still too low. You don't have to invent the weapons of the 22nd century to do this, but the industry will need a stable demand signal. Behind the scenes, the United States and other NATO countries have urged Western defense companies to bump up production. However, current and former officials and analysts said defense contractors have been slow to respond as they wait for assurances that the era of an increased arms appetite is here to stay. Mark Kansian, who served as chief of Pentagon's Force Structure and Investment Division until 2015, said, "What they say is essentially show me the money. Their fear is that the war will end and the orders will end and they will end up with these expanded factories that don't have any orders to fill them. Contributing to bottlenecks in production are rising prices of critical raw materials and a shortage of skilled labor." In mainland Europe, where military aid to Ukraine is being dwarfed by the United States and some countries, such as Germany, are still reluctant to dust off old tanks to send to Ukraine. Leaders do not want a mobilization that would put the defense industry back on a seemingly war footing. And skilled workers, high school trained technicians, designers, and safety and environmental experts are often reluctant to bring their talents to the defense industry, fearing that they could be first on the chopping block in any downturn. In an all-out artillery war with the Russians that has lasted almost since the Kremlin declared its operation in the Donbas region in April, Ukraine has practically run itself out of Soviet standard artillery, which comprises about 60% of their arsenal, forcing Kiev to rely more heavily on NATO standard artillery that can't be produced fast enough to sustain the fight. CNN has also covered the same story. Concern is growing in the US government about its ability to keep supplying Ukraine with state-of-the-art systems and ammunition amid its ongoing conflict with Russia. According to three US officials interviewed by CNN, some of the challenges the US is facing in terms of supporting Ukraine include its dwindling stockpiles of arms and the ability of the defense industry to cope with demand. One official told CNN that there is a finite amount of excess stock that Washington can send to Kiev. The report says Washington is particularly concerned about the available stockpiles of 155mm artillery shells and Stinger air defense missiles. Some officials are also worried about the production of arms such as HARMS anti-radiation missiles, GMLRS surface-to-surface missiles, and Javelin anti-tank systems. However, CNN source maintains that the dent in the stockpiles does not compromise national security, given that the weapons for Ukraine do not come from the supplies the Pentagon reserves for its own contingencies. A senior official also told CNN that the assessment that the United States is running low on arms is subjective, as it depends on how much risk the Pentagon is prepared to accept. Officials say one of the major concerns is that the U.S. defense industry is struggling to keep up with demand, while European countries cannot fully backfill their own stockpiles to replace the military hardware already sent to Ukraine. Since the start of Russia's special operation in Ukraine in last February, the United States and its Western allies have been providing Kiev with billions of dollars in security assistance, with Moscow repeatedly warning that the weapons shipments to Kiev would only prolong the conflict. According to the Pentagon, as of early November, Washington has committed to sending Kiev over 1,400 Stinger missiles, 8,500 Javelin missiles, 142 155mm howitzers, and up to 903,000 155mm artillery rounds. The website Politico has also covered the same story. A much-touted European Union fund meant to help countries replace weapons shipped to Ukraine is increasingly unable to cover an influx of reimbursement requests, and it hasn't even sent out its first payment yet. Days after Russia's special operation began, the European Union set up a 500 million euro pot, encouraging countries to arm Kiev and asked the European Union to foot the bill. According to estimates shared by three diplomats, after looking at the receipts that it has received, Brussels determined it could cover about 85% of the costs. Then the European Union authorized an even bigger pot, eventually totaling 1.5 billion euros. The estimates showed the European Union got so many requests that it calculated Brussels could only cover roughly 46% of the requests. According to the diplomats, the plummeting percentage angered Poland, one of the EU's largest weapons donors to Ukraine, and a leading reimbursement seeker, having submitted 1.8 billion euros in receipts. For days, the country blocked a final agreement on disbursing the second tranche of money, hoping to negotiate a higher rate. One diplomat noted, for them, below 50% is just too little. But according to diplomats, Warsaw ultimately relented, agreeing recently to the 46% figure. The move came as frustration mounted among other member countries of the European Union, who saw Poland as standing between them and large EU payments. Still, the waning payback scheme risked damaging the EU's reputation as a reliable military partner, just as Ukraine implores Europe for more weapons for the conflict with Russia. Already, European Union powers, Germany and France, are facing criticism for not donating enough weaponry and ammunition, while some smaller countries say they're running low on supplies.
Wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
Negotiators from nearly 200 countries at the COP27 UN Climate Summit in Egypt agreed to set up a loss and damage fund meant to help vulnerable countries cope with climate disasters. They also agreed the globe needs to cut greenhouse gas emissions nearly in half by 2030. The agreement also reaffirmed the goal of keeping global warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels. However, for the 27th time, the UN climate talks have failed to directly address the biggest driver of the climate crisis, the production of gas, oil, and coal. This is amid calls for the phase-out of all fossil fuels inside the conference walls and beyond. More than 80 countries had supported a proposal to phase down the use of fossil fuels at the UN Climate Summit. Ultimately, an attempt to address the biggest source of the planet's warming emissions that are causing the climate crisis ended in a fiasco, as the participants only agreed to phase down polluting coal power and phase out inefficient fossil fuel subsidies. That's after a number of oil and gas-producing nations, led by Saudi Arabia, blocked a key proposal to phase out all fossil fuels, not just coal. German Foreign Minister Annalena Baerbock said it is more than frustrating to see overdue steps on mitigation and the phase-out of fossil energies being stonewalled by a number of large emitters and oil producers. Addressing this summit, the European Union's climate chief, Frans Timmermans, said the EU was disappointed with the final outcome of the summit.
What we have in front of us is not enough of a step forward for people and planet. We should have done much more.
The UN chief, Antonio Guterres, reacted with saying that the COP27 climate talks had fallen short in pushing for the urgent, drastic carbon cutting needed to tackle global warming.
Our planet is still in the emergency room. We need to drastically reduce emissions now, and this is an issue this COP did not address.
Environmental campaigners labeled the COP27 summit as yet another monumental failure to tackle climate crisis. Activists blasted richer countries for not doing more to limit carbon emissions. They say the US, EU, UK, and others came to the summit with empty words, hollow promises, and a refusal to take responsibility for having set the planet on fire and destroying millions of lives and livelihoods. While the agreement to establish a loss and damage fund represents immense progress for vulnerable nations who have been calling for finance to address the impacts of climate change for many years, this win is bittersweet. The failure to address the root cause of loss and damage through agreeing to phase out oil, gas, and coal will mean more loss and damage in future. Currently, approximately 84% of the world's energy needs are met from the usage of fossil fuels, especially oil. In 2021, the world consumed nearly 490 exajoules of fossil fuels. That amounts to an unfathomable figure of epic proportions. The world is on track to produce more than double the fossil fuels that are compatible with a 1.5 degrees Celsius target. The fossil fuel industry is also earning 11-figure profits from this addiction, while households struggle to afford basic needs and over 1 billion people live with almost no modern energy. Africa alone is home to 600 million people without access to electricity. The US and China top in fossil fuel consumption. According to data, an average American consumes at least 23 barrels of petroleum every year. With billions of dollars invested every year into establishing wars, strengthening military and weaponry technologies by developed nations, they still have not come up with a concrete solution to end complete dependency on fossil fuels. Future changes are expected to include a warmer atmosphere, a warmer and more acidic ocean, higher sea levels, and larger changes in precipitation patterns. The extent of future climate change depends on what we do now to reduce greenhouse gases.
Security services, the fake Israeli regime, and certain Western politicians that have engineered plots to spark a civil war, destroy and break up Iran, must know that Iran is neither Libya nor Sudan. That was what Iran's foreign minister tweeted recently. Abdullahian said that Iran's enemies have their eyes set on Iran's territorial integrity and identity, accusing Israel and Western intelligence services of plotting to start civil war in the Islamic Republic. The statements were confirmed by a leaked audio from a presenter at UK's state-funded news channel, BBC Persian. Abdullahian had good reason to relay those sentiments. The statements came on the heels of a number of terrorist attacks in the Islamic Republic. One took place in Izeh, in the southwestern province of Khuzestan, killing 7 people, including a 9-year-old boy and woman. The other took place in Isfahan, in which terrorists attacked security forces and killed 3 of them. There's a vicious anti-Iran media campaign led by terrorist media outlets like the Saudi-funded Iran International, which are twisting the truth and are accusing Iranian security forces of committing the terrorist acts. This stage of the anti-Iran plot is called an armed one, something that the former U.S. National Security Advisor John Bolton warned about. He claimed that subversive elements in Iran, which he dubbed as the opposition, were arming themselves with weapons stolen from besieged forces and smuggled from Iraq's Kurdistan. This was evident when an uptick in the number of security forces killed were reported during 3 days, from November 15th through November 18th. During this period, 14 security forces were reported to have been victims of terrorist attacks. The terrorist killings in Izeh, Isfahan, and Mashhad, which followed a recent similar attack against pilgrims and worshippers at the shrine of Shah Charagh in Shiraz, also showed that the enemy plots have failed, and they are now subscribing to terrorist acts involving firearms and weapons. Iran has blasted the silence of the international community over the recent terrorist attacks. It blamed foreign powers for promoting and encouraging violence and terrorism. Further said that their silence is testament to that, saying undoubtedly the international silence of claimants of human rights and foreign promoters of chaos and violence in Iran in the face of the most blatant terrorist operations in a number of Iranian cities conveys no other message than encouragement of terrorism and the promotion of terrorism across the world. The Iranian city of Mashhad. Funeral processions were held for three besieged volunteer force members who were stabbed to death by rioters earlier this week. The turnout in the tens of thousands. Iran's leader has stated that they are trying to give the impression that large numbers of people are opposed to the Islamic establishment in order to impress ignorant individuals. However, the leader noted that the people's mass presence on stage to safeguard the Islamic revolution amounts to a slap in the face of ill-wishers. That became even more evident when the following day in Isfahan, again, people showed up in large numbers, tens of thousands, to pay their last respects to the victims while condemning all acts of violence and terror. Putting these scenes next to each other, there is no comparison. The Saudi-funded Iran International depiction of what is happening in Iran is far from reality, to the point that the channel, which Iran has named a terrorist entity, is actively promoting and encouraging not only acts of violence, but is under the delusional impression that there is a revolution underway in Iran. The scenes, when put next to each other, speak for themselves.
For weeks, Iran has witnessed unrest and riots in its different cities. The unrest started after a young woman named Mahsa Amini fainted in police custody and later died in hospital. The protests were initially peaceful, but violent elements supported by Western spy agencies hijacked the protests and turned into violent riots. The unrest has provided a fertile ground for Western governments and spy agencies to launch a media warfare on Iran and create anti-Iran fake news. A recent notorious case in point is the recent tweet by Canada's Prime Minister Justin Trudeau. In the controversial tweet, the Canadian Premier had claimed that Iran has sentenced 15,000 protesters to death. The false claim, which has been part of the media campaign against Iran, has been circulating on social media in recent days. The inaccurate tweet was live on Trudeau's official Twitter account for almost 12 hours before it was deleted. Several Western celebrities and news outlets, including the Newsweek, also shared the erroneous information. This is not the only case of false news propagated against Iran. When the protests first started in Iran, Western-backed propaganda outlets claimed that Mahsa Amini was beaten to death by Iranian police forces. Following an elaborate investigation, that claim also proved to be false. It's now become a common practice for these propaganda machines to publish unverified footages on protests in Iran. Back in September 2022, U.S. media outlets ran a controversial report. The report was widely discussed and celebrated in anti-Iran outlets. But it turned out to be a fake report after Ayatollah Khamenei publicly attended a military ceremony in Tehran in October. The false report was propagated by Western outlets as Iran was battling the Western-backed riots. Social media platforms have also turned into a battleground of narratives against Iran. Analysis shows those tweeting the hashtags associated with the unrest showed a striking number of new accounts created since the protests started.
In August 2011, when there were riots in London because someone was shot and killed by the police, a number of people were killed. I don't recall the exact number. But big tech, Facebook, back then BlackBerry, and Twitter cooperated with the British government. In the case of Iran, big tech is used as a weapon against Iranians. So Iranian voices don't come out. Iranians lose their, if they are opposed to the Western narrative, they get sanctioned. All of the Iranian media is sanctioned. Many individuals have lost their accounts. I have lost my Facebook and Instagram accounts. So these Western big tech companies, they cooperate with Western governments, even though in the riots in London, people were killed, and they arrested people and put them in jail for inciting riots. But in Iran, these same media outlets make threats, they support, they help people make Molotov cocktails, and they help mobilize the rioters.
The online anti-Iran campaign is fed by fake accounts used by members of the anti-Iran Mujahideen-e-Khalq organization terrorist cult who are stationed in Albania and so-called journalists employed by the Saudi-funded London-based Iran International TV, which is now on Tehran's terror blacklist. The television channel has openly been promoting monarchists, the highly notorious MKO terror group, and most significantly, separatist terrorists. A particular case in point is a project by Western media outlets to accuse the government of killing its own citizens. They have produced a long list of citizens which they claim have been killed by security forces.
Iran has witnessed another deadly terrorist attack. The latest deadly incident happened in the city of Izeh in Iran's southwestern province of Khuzestan. Unidentified gunmen opened fire on civilians and security forces, killing several people, including a child and an elderly woman. The terror attack also left a number of people injured. No group has yet claimed responsibility for the assault. President Ebrahim Raisi has condoled with the families of the victims, ordering security officials to identify and bring to justice all terrorists behind the attack. A senior judicial official says three people who were behind the brutal attack were arrested. A special operation is going on to identify and to bring to justice other people involved in the attack in the city of Izeh. Separately, a religious seminary school in the Izeh city was set ablaze by a group of rioters. No one was injured in that incident. Separately, three people were killed and eight security forces injured during riots in Semirom in the central Iranian province of Isfahan. Two security forces also killed and two others wounded in the city of Malikshahr in Isfahan province. Last month, a terrorist attack happened in the city of Shiraz. On October 26, a terrorist attacked the popular Shia shrine of Shah Cheragh in Iran's southwestern province of Fars, killing over a dozen people. That attack was claimed by the Daesh terrorist group. The attacks come amid ongoing foreign-backed riots that have hit various Iranian provinces after a 22-year-old Kurdish woman named Mahsa Amini died in the hospital despite intensive medical care and resuscitation efforts. The rioters have been going on a rampage across the country, attacking security officers, resorting to vandalism against public property, and desecrating religious sanctities. Iran says the attacks are part of a larger plot to destabilize the country. Foreign Minister Amir Abdullahian says security services, the Israeli regime, and certain Western politicians are conspiring to trigger a civil war in Iran to destroy and to disintegrate the country. He warned them that Iran is not Libya or Sudan. He also noted that the enemies are targeting Iran's territorial integrity and identity, saying that Iran will not allow anyone to jeopardize national security. The terrorist attack comes amid Western attempts to stoke unrest in Iran and to create more economic hardships for the Iranian people. Late last month, Iran's main intelligence bodies reported that the U.S., backed by the U.K., Saudi Arabia, Israel, and other allies, are devising a multidimensional plot for instigating riots in the Islamic Republic and directing the wave of violence.
We are telling our enemies, the U.S., Britain, the Saudis, these are the ones that, through their destructive media outlets, They are targeting our revolution. We are warning them that we will break you. We will crush you. You will not find any way into this territory.
Western countries expressed their open support for rioters and acts that Tehran described as inciting violence and hatred. The European Union and some Western countries have imposed sanctions on Iran over its approach toward the recent riots. Recently, the former U.S. National Security Advisor John Bolton confirmed that subversive groups in Iran, which he characterized as the opposition, are being armed with weapons imported from Iraq's Kurdistan.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/EN.
In the limelight.
Grand declarations at COP27 on tackling the climate emergency are sabotaged by a treaty from the 1990s that sees European nations held to ransom by the energy companies. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for the first part, please. Europe's dirtiest secret, one deterring it from seriously and rapidly tackling the climate emergency, is not being addressed at COP27, the United Nations Climate Change Conference hosted by Egypt. Mention of the Energy Charter Treaty would expose how far Western states, the biggest greenhouse gas polluters, are from being in a position to cut carbon emissions in half by 2030. Failure to do so sets the world on course for catastrophic global warming above 1.5 degrees Celsius. Whatever grand declarations they issue at the summit in Sharm el-Sheikh concludes, the reality is that the European states effectively tied their hands for the foreseeable future by ratifying the Energy Treaty back in the 1990s. They have landed themselves with a massive financial burden if they try to cut emissions. Europe would rather not admit it has made itself the prisoner of transnational energy corporations. The firms can hold member states to ransom for compensation, frustrating European efforts to significantly change energy policies for at least the next two decades. The treaty's stipulations help to explain why, despite years of climate pledges, the latest research shows fossil fuel emissions are set to hit a record high by the end of this year. Antonio Guterres, the UN Secretary General, told world leaders at COP, "We are on a highway to climate hell with our foot on the accelerator. Our planet is fast approaching tipping points that will make climate chaos irreversible." The Energy Charter Treaty is one of the main drivers propelling Europe down that highway. Further dissuading Europe from publicly addressing problems with the Energy Treaty is the fact that it would highlight tensions over energy policy with Russia that are at the root of the current crisis. It might even provide a crucial piece of the puzzle in trying to understand who was behind the sabotage of the two Nord Stream pipelines supplying Russian gas directly to Germany and why. The pipelines were blown up by an unknown party or parties in October. Instead, there continues to be a conspiracy of silence over the energy treaty and its effects. The failure to push for its abolition at COP27 will undermine any declarations of progress on addressing the climate crisis. The Energy Charter Treaty came into being shortly after the collapse of the Soviet Union in 1991. Energy firms lobbied for its adoption to secure long-term investments exploiting fossil energy resources in the former Soviet Union, in case these newly independent states later switched their industries back to public ownerships. Corporations were given the right to sue any treaty member that changed its energy policy in ways that might harm their profits. Even if states pull out of the treaty, a sunset clause means they are still liable to lost claims for an additional 20 years. Hearings are made in secret at the special international tribunals. The European Union and individual European states, including the UK, are among the more than 50 states that have ratified the treaty. There has been mounting concern in Europe, however, at its impact on their plans for a green transition. Italy pulled out in 2015, and in a major development, Germany announced recently its intention to quit so. Spain, France, Poland, and the Netherlands have threatened to follow. Other contracting parties include Turkey, Japan, and states in Central Asia. Despite its obvious drawbacks, the treaty is being pushed aggressively at Africa, the West Asia, Latin America, and Asia with the promise of new energy investments. It will become harder to reduce these countries' carbon emissions the moment they sign up. The United States is an observer to the treaty, but not subject to its provisions. Russia signed the treaty, but never ratified it. Nonetheless, arbitrators at a special tribunal ruled that it is still liable. Although the trade pact is a legacy of distrust stemming from the Cold War, energy corporations have repurposed it in recent years as a tool for obstructing European efforts to go green. States face a stark choice. Either give in to corporate bullying to stick with fossil fuels or face massive compensation suits, valued at hundreds of billions of pounds, for shifting to renewable energy supplies. Even the move to renewables by Europe entails major risks under the treaty, as the science around green energy constantly evolves and regulations change with it. Any amendment to energy supply risks triggering a spate of compensation suits. Had, for example, Britain's former Labour leader Jeremy Corbyn won the 2019 general election, his government could have faced a series of crushing damages claims if it had implemented its manifesto commitment to nationalize the UK's energy sector. Similarly, states could be sued if they try to take measures to curb fuel poverty or impose energy windfall taxes. Similarly, states could be sued if they try to take measures to curb fuel poverty or impose energy windfall taxes. Concerns about Europe's ability to meet its 2015 Paris Agreement targets, designed to limit global warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius, have grown as fossil fuel firms have scored a string of victories at the treaty's special tribunals. Among the hardest hit in Spain, which already faces damages claims of 10 billion euros, the Netherlands has risked a legal backlash over its plans to phase out coal, and Italy, even outside the treaty, is being sued under the sunset clause for its ban on oil and gas drilling in the Adriatic. In August, a tribunal awarded the UK oil firm Rockhopper 120 million pounds in damages over Italy's moves to become greener. A 2020 study suggested total energy investments protected by the treaty amounted to some 1.3 trillion euros, far above the $630 billion estimated to have been invested globally in climate action in 2020. Potential compensation claims will continue to grow under the treaty, and damages will have to be paid in addition to expenditure on renewables. It would be hard to deny that these astronomical compensation sums are creating a decisive regulatory chill, dissuading governments from phasing out fossil fuels and switching to renewables for fear of being sued. Energy firms are rushing in to fill the void. New research has found that they are massively expanding exploration for additional sources of fossil fuel, spending $160 billion over the past 2 years. The International Energy Agency has warned that the world cannot avoid climate catastrophe unless there is a moratorium on the opening of new oil and gas fields. That may explain why there were a record number of fossil fuel lobbyists at COP27, more than the combined delegations of the 10 countries facing the biggest impacts from the climate emergency.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Current world order will be replaced by a new order where US is isolated, Asia powerful, resistance front expanded. This is the part of a speech delivered by the leader of the Islamic Revolution during a meeting with students on Wednesday, November 2nd, 2022. This meeting was held on the occasion of National Students' Day and National Day of Fighting Against Global Arrogance, which are commemorated on the 13th of Aban, 4th of November. You Americans openly declared that you killed our fearless general. You murdered him, and you were proud of it. And you announced that you gave the orders. Martyr Soleimani was not just a national hero, he was the region's hero. Martyr Soleimani played a major and unparalleled role in solving the problems of several countries in the region. You martyred this general man and his companions, Martyr Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis and several others. You supported those, the Zionists who assassinated our nuclear scientists. The Zionists martyred our scientists one by one, and you supported them. Not only did you fail to condemn them, but you also supported them.
دنیای اسلام یک
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
You have frozen billions of dollars of the Iranian nation's assets in the US and in other countries. If this money was at the disposal of a hard-working administration like the current administration, it would be able to do great things with it. But they froze these assets. They kept them. This excludes the assets that were frozen in the U.S. since the beginning of the revolution. The United States fingerprints can be seen in most anti-Iranian events, and then they claim that they empathize with the Iranian nation. They said this again yesterday, that they empathize with the Iranian nation. They lie with complete insolence. Of course, they have shown great enmity towards us, but the Iranian nation, getting the better of them, has thwarted many of these enmities. Some of these events are still with us. We have not forgotten them. We will never forget the martyrdom of Martyr Soleimani. They should know of this. We have said something about this, and we stand by our word. It will happen at the right time, at the right place, God willing.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me.
This is IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio. With you every single moment.
In the limelight.
A German official has sounded the alarm to people, warning that the country is facing serious electricity shortage in the country. Since the start of Russia-Ukraine conflict in late February, Germany has offered substantial military support to Ukraine, sending the country billions of dollars in military aid and heavy weaponry. Russia has in turn cut off gas supplies to Europe, causing a worsening energy crisis. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. RT wrote in this regard, many households in Germany will take another hit from rising energy bills in January as power and gas suppliers face higher wholesale market prices and soaring grid fees, Reuters has reported, citing the Verivox prices portal. A Verivox energy expert, Thorsten Stork, said in a statement, the price level for energy is historically high and reducing the purchasing power of households. The portal has monitored 800 electricity and 700 gas providers and found that 137 regional power operators are set to increase prices by an average of about 61%, while 167 German gas suppliers are planning a price hike of roughly 54%. This could result in an overall increase in energy prices of more than 50% in Europe's largest economy. The electricity bills of German families in November have risen by 5% since the start of the year, while gas bills surged by more than 40% above January's level, Reuters said. According to Verivox estimations, the extra average cost for a household using 4,000 kilowatt hours of electricity per year would be 784 euros, while a typical household using 20,000 kilowatt of gas could see an increase of 1,247 euros per year. Such a dramatic price growth in energy-dependent Germany stems from the plummeting supplies of Russian gas and lower nuclear output in France, which is struggling to restart all of its reactors ahead of winter. Experts say that energy inflation is likely to continue despite a package of emergency measures by the government. Also, Press TV reported President of the German Federal Office for Civil Protection and Disaster Assistance, Ralf Tissler, said in an interview, "We have to assume that there will be big blackouts in Germany in winter." He added, "We have to expect blackouts in winter. By this, I mean a regional and temporary interruption in the power supply." Tissler said, adding that the power cuts were due to both energy shortages and temporary shutdowns of the entire grid to protect the entire network. The official further added that he was referring to short-term power outages, so-called brownouts, rather than larger-scale blackouts. Tissler warned that the situation could potentially reach a critical point, urging Germans to stock up on food, water, and other essential supplies. "The last couple of years have been really tough for Germans," Tissler said, adding that the COVID-19 pandemic served as a prime example of the unforeseen effects of a crisis. "The coming years are yet to be more challenging in light of the worsening climate situation and other serious and geopolitical tensions," Tissler pointed out. He said the saddest part of the news was that the European Union, at the confederal level, denies the hardships that normal people were going to face in winter. In related news, a major German grid operator told media in early October that the country may be forced this year to cut its electricity exports to other countries in order to survive in winter. Hendrik Neumann, chief technical officer of German electricity grid operator Amprion, told the Financial Times about potentially cutting off electricity exports to other countries to avoid local shortages. Neumann said in the interview that temporarily pausing exports of electricity for hours rather than days could be a last resort to salvage the country's embattled energy crisis, which has been in the eyes of the storm since gas supplies from Russia were cut. According to Press TV, France and Austria are the biggest importers of Germany's surplus electric power, whose energy crises could deteriorate with any switch off of German exports. Neumann said the Ukraine crisis was one of numerous overlapping issues contributing to Europe's energy crisis, worsened by the shutdown of over half of France's 56 nuclear power plants and low water levels on main rivers delaying coal shipping. He claimed that while Amprion ignored political and ideological aspects, he didn't agree with the comments from Economics Minister Robert Habeck, who said in July that Germany didn't have an electricity problem. "If that was the case, we would not have been asked by government to conduct a special analysis on the electricity market in winter," he noted. He added, "The government needs to draw the political conclusions and take the political responsibility." The government decided in September to postpone the decommissioning of 2 out of 3 nuclear power plants in the country, saying it will keep the 2 plants running until at least April. Germany shut down 3 nuclear reactors in 2021, and shutting the remaining 3 would officially mark the end of the nuclear phase-out of domestic energy production. The government said it would still need to make a decision about extending the lifespan of the power plants beyond April, and that decision would be dependent on the nuclear power plant situation in France. Media reported last week that France risks running short of electricity for several days this winter as a result of lower than usual nuclear plant availability, citing the country's grid operator. According to Électricité de France, EDP, repairs and maintenance on almost half of its nuclear plants may turn the country, a traditional power exporter, into an importer this year. Under this scenario, French customers would have to pay a premium to their neighbors. Their prices have been soaring lately, the report said. The French government has called on businesses and households to conserve energy to avoid blackouts. In the event of a possible electricity shortage, grid operator RTE will launch an eco-watt red alert 3 days in advance, demanding reduced consumption. France, which generates roughly 70% of its electricity from 56 nuclear reactors, all operated by EDF, had just 31 of those online recently. The company said last week that it aims to have more than 40 units in operation in December and January. In the meantime, media reports said the price of electricity in Germany and France for 2023 has soared to new records due to the European energy crisis caused by the ongoing conflict in Ukraine. Also, according to AFP, in Germany, the price of electricity for the year ahead reached 850 euros per megawatt hours in the stock market. The year ahead contract in France's bourse market passed 1,000 euros recently. Compared to last year's price, 85 euros in both countries, the year ahead contracts in both countries' markets indicate a stark rise in energy prices. Soaring energy prices coupled with runaway inflation have put the livelihood of Europeans under heavy constraints after the Europeans severed their energy ties with Russia, the main supplier of natural gas to Europe, over the Ukraine conflict, triggering a dire economic crisis on the continent. The shutdown of several nuclear reactors in France due to corrosion issues has contributed to the electricity price increase as power production has dramatically decreased in the country.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavet, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
People have gathered to receive winter fuel in form of coal and wood distributed by Iranian embassy in Kabul to warm the cold days of their lives. Najiba and Tahira, who take care of their children all alone, cry out the problems of the cold winter.
I don't have a supporter and my husband has passed away. It's five of us in my family, all of whom are jobless. Currently, we live in a rental house. We could really use such aids and hope it continues, especially in winters.
It is a hard winter, especially for us who don't have the primary needs of our lives. I have small children. I literally don't have anything to warm my home. I work hard to feed my seven family members, but still can't meet our needs.
Almost all who receive relief aids are widows and orphans, most of whom burn plastic, tires, and other waste materials to warm their houses and sometimes cook food. The happiness is noticeable as these widows can provide a warm home for their orphans. The number of these families can reach up to 1,000.
Well, we are prepared to distribute fuel to 1,000 families. The fuel is firewood and coal. We give each family a package of almost 200 kilograms. It isn't much, but it could be enough for almost a month. We are hoping to be able to continue such activities in the coming months also.
With the arrival of winter, concerns about the situation of the people of Afghanistan have intensified. The arrival of winter and warming houses has added to the daily problems of the poor in Afghanistan. Although aid is being provided to some people, there are still many who spend their nights in cold weather. Abdullah Mirzadeh, Kabul.
Four members of an Italian neo-Nazi organization known as the Order of Hagal were arrested on Tuesday in the cities of Naples, Caserta and Avellino, about 200 kilometers south of Rome. At different phases within the process of the investigation, the police collected numerous Nazi and fascist propaganda material, bullets, weapons, tactical clothing and other elements that convinced Italy's judiciary to make charges against members of the Order of Hagal. The police investigation was launched in 2019 when authorities suspected neo-Nazi groups were plotting violent acts in Italy. Today, members of the neo-Nazi organization, the Order of Hagal, have been accused of planning to carry out terrorist attacks on civilian and police targets.
Investigative activity showed that the neo-Nazi organization placed in Italy and Nazi Ukrainian military groups such as the Azov Battalion, Misanthropic Division and Centuria have been in contact to conduct paramilitary training. In fact, diplomas were given for completing the training.
The Azov Battalion is a neo-Nazi paramilitary group that has been incorporated into the Ukrainian National Guard and is currently fighting against Russian troops. The Order of Hagal is an organization based in the area surrounding Naples. Authorities, however, suspect that the group may have subdivisions across Italy. The Order of Hagal has established operational ties to the Azov Battalion. Besides Nazism and anti-Semitism, it promotes subversion and white supremacy culture.
Some of the neo-Nazis' organization's members were trained in Ukrainian camps with the purpose of conducting the military operations in Italy. The group was recruiting among disadvantaged Italians, often young people, people who have a negative, incomplete view of society and can be easily manipulated. The Order of Hagal maintains direct and frequent contacts with its members over Telegram.
An additional member of the neo-Nazi Order of Hagal organization remains wanted by the Italian police, but is currently fighting Russian forces alongside the Azov Battalion. Not long ago, a high-ranking officer from the International Criminal Police Organization, Interpol, warned that the high availability of weapons during the current conflict in Ukraine will result in the proliferation of illicit arms in the post-conflict phase. Max Civili, Rome.
People turned out in the city of Isfahan to bid farewell to three security forces who lost their lives in the street violence gripping several Iranian cities in recent weeks. The mourners condemned the killings, urging authorities to bring the perpetrators to justice.
This funeral sends the message to the well-wishers of the country that we support our security forces. The security of our country matters and will not allow anyone to undermine it.
I urge the authorities to bring those behind the incident to justice. So today, we gathered here to thank the security forces who are trying to protect us against chaos and instability.
The incident took place in north of Isfahan on November 16th, when two armed men on a motorbike opened fire at the security forces, killing one law enforcement officer and two members of the volunteer Basij force. It happened amid clashes between police and rioters. The intelligence service of Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps says it has identified and arrested those behind the incident.
It's clear who is inciting the turmoil in the country. The US, UK, and Saudi Arabia are behind the evil plan to divide our nation. But we are here to tell them